tell who's missing? You don't have the deeper voices, do you? Is that?
It's usually me and Therese.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay, it's funny.
She's more.
Well, yeah. There's that. But you are together. You are that. I mean, you are almost too much sometimes. You're so good in that power thing together, and beautifully done. Well, welcome. Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I see you multiplied in the dark again. I love how that works. I love how that is. We are embarking on our final message, and I like to save the last talk of the year to, were you going to tell me or what? I know, that's pretty remarkable, and I'm trying not to strain it today. Isn't that funny? Is this going to work for me? Yeah, I felt pretty free there. Thought I was giving a talk on freedom or something. So we are talking about being a stand for peace today. And I, for my on my own part, I for one can honestly say that I am a stand for peace. I believe that I have committed my life to such a statement in as much as I understand that peace is something much greater than we have yet to imagine it, and that we are invited at this time of year to step into that idea of what it would mean to live in a world that really understood and lived peace. So we'll be talking about lots of different ways that shows up in our lives. And this morning I wanted to begin with a quote from the founder of religious science, Dr. Ernest Holmes, who said a lot of amazing things. But he has a generous supply of quotations on peace. He spoke to this idea quite frequently. And from his book, Thoughts Are Things, I found this quote. There is a peace at the center of your being, a peace that can be felt through the day and in the cool of the evening when you have turned from your labor and that first star shines in the soft light of the sky. It broods over the earth quietly, tenderly, just as a mother watching over her child. Isn't that lovely? There is a peace at the center of your being. And that's what I want to really speak to this morning, is that when there is a lot of chaos in our life, which, let's face it, the holiday alone invites some out of the ordinary experiences for us. And I don't know about you, but in my home, it feels disorderly. You know, I have a pretty tight schedule. And so to fit in all the sort of expected things that we do over the holidays is a real challenge for me, and it creates, even decorating, do you notice that there's this disorder that you have to play in before you get to the order, and now we're about to do the same thing, not only at home, but here at the center. So there's that part of moving through the end of the year that allows us to look at that. And I wanted to package it all up today in a cute little package, because I don't know about you, but I'm out of kilter with the calendar right now. When I realized yesterday was Saturday and I really had to get the talk completely written by yesterday, it was like, wow, what happened? Well, it's because we had a little disruption in our normal routine. So what I did to get me in the mood to be able to write the talk for today was I went to my drawer of talks. I have this little dresser, it's a little three drawer thing that I keep my office supplies in right by my computer. And I reserved the top drawer for my past talks. And what I found is it gives me it kind of helps me keep things tidy, because I can come home and I can empty my bag and drop that talk. I usually take the paper clip out and staple it together, and I drop it in that drawer because it fits just nicely. It turns out it holds about 14 months worth of Sunday sermons. And after that, I have to repackage it and start over, start again. And I'm about to do that because that drawer is almost full to the top now. But I looked through the messages that I gave last year, and people are always asking me, well, what are your favorite talks? What are the messages, Reverend Karen, that you've delivered that you liked the best? And one of the ones that came to the top of the list for me was that one called The Clever Lever. Do you remember The Clever Lever? We use that quote from Archimedes where he said, give me one firm place to stand. We're talking about being a stand today. Give me one firm place to stand and a long lever, and I will be able to move the world. And that was a wonderful message. I had a good time preparing. Another one I liked was The Seventh Sense, where I spoke to you from my heart on something that was rather original in thought. You know, that we have five senses, and then we talk about the sixth sense, and we like the sixth sense. You know, it seems in New Thought communities we're big on, seeing auras and being in that intuitive place. But I believe there's a seventh sense as well, and that is what I call the divine spark, where it's that mystical place that's not the same as that intuitive place. It's when we have given up the human perspective and we go a little deeper. And then I had a couple of short titles that were favorites of mine. One was Echo. And the other was Words. Words was a really one of my top favorites. And then I give, every now and then I try and give a how-to message. And my favorite how-to message, it turns out, was a talk entitled Very Interesting. Now, we go through a whole year of messages, and I always like to say that we only say about four things here. Once in a while, somebody calls me on that. What are they? I want to know what the four things are. But it's a bit of an exaggeration, which if you know me, if you come back, you'll know this truth about me next time. I'm prone to hyperbole because I think it's fun. I like to exaggerate. I don't do it on purpose. I just see life through really big eyes. I recently wrote a blog that said that. But what I can tell you is we teach spiritual principle. So all year long, the messages have included topics such as forgiveness and releasing our attachment to controlling things we can't control, to giving up our judgments, to look at the way we can, we talk a lot about prayer and sitting in the stillness. I call it my morning sitting time, where I use meditation to really move into that place where I can tap into that which Holmes says, there is that place of peace at the center of your being. That's when I tap into that. So we talk about meditation or stillness. We talk about authenticity a lot. We talk about prosperity. We talk about the creative process. But what that is it's the way we make choices in our lives so that we can experience greater and greater possibilities. So are all those things sounding familiar, like topics you heard last year? Yeah, because there really are only a few things that we do, and then the ministers are always looking for more creative ways of expressing the same old stuff. I think the universal laws or the spiritual principles in the universe are simple. And in our ability to try and understand them and embody them, then we find that it's simple, and yet sometimes it takes some work to really embody the principles so that we are using them, so that we are showing up as those qualities of God. And that's what all the principles boil down to, if you look at it. I say this a lot here. You know, there are only a few. By the way, do you miss Reverend Cheryl as much as I do? I mean, those amens from the back of the hall, you know, I'll be so glad when that long cruise ends and she can get herself back here. I almost used a language she would say. Oh, thank you, God. Good save. So what it boils down to are the qualities, the one word qualities: love, joy, peace, beauty, harmony. That would be that divine order in the universe. And certainly peace and light and wisdom. And so there are a series of terms we use that sound like they're adjectives. But, you know, we see that as something greater. We see all of those things, love and joy and peace and wisdom and goodness and power. We see all of those as that same statement, that you could use it interchangeably. And the way that Ernest Holmes said that you have within you at the center of your being that peace, well, you also have that love. You also have that joy. You also have that light and that beauty and that wisdom and that harmony. And so every yearning we have for those things is our yearning to see that out pictured in our very own lives, not just be something we feel within. And the beauty of how this process works is that those qualities that we have divinely inherited, that we are created in the image and likeness of, those qualities are already ours. And so what that means is, as we move through our lives, we bump into things, sometimes each other, and we have encounters that don't feel very loving or that don't feel very peaceful. And yet still, right there, no matter how disturbed I'm feeling, that divine peace at the core of my being is undisturbed. It remains absolutely perfect. And sometimes just remembering that as I'm moving through something complex is enough to allow me the space to breathe and to know that God is. Thank you so much. I feel better. So what I wanted to say today, since I'm talking about peace, is slightly different than the peace talks that I've given in the past. And that is that in order to look at peace, we have to look at the opposite of peace. We have to look at the chaos. We have to look at the disturbances. We have to look at the way there is disorder in our lives. And that can be the very clue that takes us somewhere deeper in our own experience of meeting the divine. Now, we say, in New Thought, we like to say, peace is our natural state. And I'll tell you, I honestly have had days where I just don't know that I want to agree with any of that. But we say that that peace is our natural state. And what I know is that all of those qualities are. I do really believe that. It is why I can easily take that stand for peace, or why I say I am a stand for peace. But and maybe that's why we don't like conflict, you know? Maybe because it's in there and we know it's in there, that when we experience conflict, we feel that that discord, you know? It's a different vibration, right? And so I love that about the spiritual path, is that we want to get back to peace. We want to get back to being a loving, kind, and lovable human being. And sometimes it's the discord that will point the way for us. So I like to say there are, I think one of the great spiritual lessons, I call it befriending conflict. How we can face those things that don't feel very comfortable for us and still seek to meet God right in the middle of that. Because we say there is no place where God is not. So God has to be right there. And our living then, those experiences, those very experiences that don't feel very godlike, can be the way that we are looking to uncover the deeper divine pattern that's embedded in the truth of who we are. So our living, I believe the purpose is that we are revealing, we are here to reveal those greater truths. Now, Sometimes I do a lot of research for the message, and sometimes the research does me, or the research finds me. And this week, while I was doing all the activities of Christmas week, I stumbled across, God works in mysterious ways, you know, but I found this old Science of Mind magazine that had the theme of chaos on the front of it. It's big, giant, those five letters, big, giant block letters that said chaos right across the front of the Science of Mind magazine. And I was so intrigued with that. And so I dived in and I read two or three or four articles. And it was quite, if you're me, it's a fun experience. I like to look at another twist on things. But what it turned out to be was a whole magazine on peace. And I thought, that's such an interesting concept, such an interesting way for us to approach our very own lives. And in that magazine, I found this quote. It was speaking to this idea of the way that science recognizes a chaos theory. And then the contributor was saying that, trying to show us how we can apply that to our own lives. And she came up with this statement. She says, all of creation, in other words, all of that stuff we create in our own lives, if we're going to look at it personally, all of creation comes from the unpredictability, the unpredictable events of our life. All of creation, everything we create in our life, comes from the unpredictable events of our life. Let's face it, we don't like to be surprised much. Some of us, not even a birthday party. we're the main event. And we don't like change much. It's human nature that those things can be difficult for us. So if that is true, that things are created through that discomfort, then this is something really worthy of looking at it. So this is the way I interpret that, that no matter what I'm going through, how I've been surprised, how something that's going on that's making me sad, and I don't really want to be sad, I'm trying to be happy today, that all of those things are opportunities. You know, we often say that. What if we could look at it as an opportunity? So right beneath that idea of a frenzied disorder, whatever that is, the surprise, the change, whatever it is, unexpected company. Anybody have that experience? There's something perfect unfolding. And let's face it, it often does not look perfect. It's hard to see the goodness in a lot of that stuff that's trying to change shape and reveal itself as a quality of God. And so the invitation is for us to dive deeper into those things. Now, I don't do this all the time. Sometimes I just want to blame the other person for messing up my happy day or mood, my good mood, because that feels kind of easy some days. But it's an opportunity for us to dive more deeply so that we can now look at what is that perfect pattern behind the experience that's bubbling up to be revealed, or we could say healed, but we like to put the focus on, sometimes we say there's nothing to be healed, only truth to be revealed. And so those are the opportunities we're talking about. So just in the way, this is what came to my mind when I was writing this, just in the way a teenager creates a lot of chaos and havoc and disruption in an entire family sometimes, while they're looking for their independence, well, what's really going on? You know, this is a part of life. I know this. I had four children, and for one god-awful year, they were all teenagers at the same time. It was difficult. Three of them were girls. Can you imagine? It was very difficult. And so if we look at the way a teenager moves into the antics that are common in growing up, what we see is that what they're really looking for is freedom. It's the same thing we all want. And though one person, Casey, are you giving me the evil eye? Sorry. Take notes, Karen. I'll talk to you later. So, you know, we really all want the same things. But the beauty of any situation is that when we look deeper, we will be able to see this pattern of interconnectedness. See, that's what we talk about here. We talk about this great web of life and the way that we are all interconnected and that we really can't be separate. There's just no way we can't do that. And I think this is the idea of oneness that we teach in the Science of Mind philosophy. And Eric Butterworth, I think, had the best illustration I've heard recently on understanding what it means to have that God with, what is the God within? What does it mean that there's this idea of oneness, that we're all part of the great whole? We're individualized expressions of the one great whole, that whole being God itself. And so Eric Butterworth said that if you take a glass of water and you drop a button in it, what do you have? You have a glass of water with a button in it. So the button doesn't become the water just because you've dropped it in there, and you can take it out and separate it still. But oneness is more like trying to separate a wave from the ocean. It cannot be done. And so each and every one of us, as a point of light of the divine, we are those great divine qualities. We have within us, there is a place at the center of our being where all of those qualities abide. And when we begin to do that, to do our work, so to speak, we can then be a stand for peace in a way in which maybe we have never experienced before, because we're doing it honestly. We're really willing to do our work instead of projecting our stuff out there. Now, when I consider the ideas of chaos and disorder, I always go right to one of my favorite quotes. I use it often in the classroom. I've certainly shared it here in the sanctuary before. It's a quote by Emanuel Swedenborg, who was a great Christian mystic from, I think around, I didn't look it up, but I think it was around the 17th century. And Emanuel Swedenborg said these words that I keep next to every desk I sit at, because I need to refer to it awful often when things are awful. When things happen where we get confused about life, or something happens and you just don't understand it, I like to reread this quote. Before anything can be brought back into order, it is quite normal for it to be brought first into a kind of confusion, a virtual chaos. In this way, things that fit together poorly are severed from each other, and once they have been severed, then God can rearrange them in a better order. Those are fabulous words. I would be happy to read it again. Before anything can be brought back into order, it is quite normal for it to be brought first into a kind of confusion, a virtual chaos. In this way, things that fit together poorly are severed from each other. And once they have been severed, then God can rearrange them in a better order. You'll be able to find that quote on our Facebook page, maybe by the end of the day. We are always creating in our lives. And sometimes It seems that we have inadvertently created chaos, but I have come to know in my own life and through my own experiences and from doing lots of counseling that sometimes we haven't done anything at all to attract the chaos. It's just life attempting to reveal to us and through us a greater truth, a larger experience of goodness. And I know that we're resistant to that, that we really change is not a friendly word. And yet, if we look around, it's so evident that it is so natural, that life itself in every way is always moving and changing shape and changing completely. I mean, really, the seasons alone, even here in the desert, the seasons are profound lessons of how we can be more open to the natural fluctuations of life. And then I found another quote that eventually I hooked up so that this quote from Ernest Holmes follows that quote in every place I have it hidden. And this quote from Holmes says, complements it beautifully. Everything in the universe exists for the harmonious good of every other part. Everything in the universe exists for the harmonious good of every other part. The universe is forever uniting what is harmonious and diminishing what is not. It is the unessential only that is vanishing. When I read quotations like that, these quotes just sink into me and they stir me in such a way that I know there has to be more to this life than what we think we see going on. And I'll tell you something, it gives me hope. It gives me hope to lighten up on chaos, because really, I think what we're saying is that maybe it's possible if we take a step back and view chaos from a different perspective, maybe it's possible that chaos is purely divine. Yeah, you don't have to buy that today. But think about it. Just think about it. We're just planting some seeds here. See, I think it's in the mystery. I'll be teaching mysticism in the fall, spring. And fall. Christmas comes after fall. Let's not do that for a while again. I'll be teaching mysticism, and I'm going to combine it so that it is a class that represents the world religions. And we should have a really good time with that class. And we'll look at mysticism from several worldviews. I think that it was clear that Ernest Holmes saw a greater importance in mysticism toward the end of his life. And I think that we all do. It truly is what oneness is, and it's what makes the science of mind a mystical philosophy. Even though we're very law-based, you know, we like to know things work, we like the order, we like the logic, we like the affirmative prayer, we like all that stuff. But mysticism is a part of that too. And I also think that's what Holmes meant when he said, there is love and there's law. Because let's face it, what do we know about love? You know, you can't know about love. The Course in Miracles says you can only open yourself to the experience of where you block it, you know? We want to have the experience of it. We'll never be able to define it, and we'll never be able to agree on a definition of it. So life is filled with life-changing lessons, and in some ways I get this kind of visual image in my mind of the way that the chaos in our life. I like the way Swedenborg said things have to break apart. So that chaos, what if we saw it like something as healthy as tilling the earth before you plant a garden? Right? We got to break through that hard soil to get to that place of receptivity where the seed can be received. And that's what we're all doing on this gorgeous experience, moving through space on this beautiful blue pearl, doing our work, looking for peace, opening our hearts to love, and desiring to have better connections and relationships. So the spiritual path is here to offer us tools. You know, you're on it, whether you don't have to call it that, but when we take part in any kind of a teaching, and I hope that you play in lots of teachings, because that's what we do well here, is honor the many paths to God. But we develop our own spiritual practice, and there are so many things we can include in that idea of what it means to have a spiritual practice. And using the tools is the real trick. It's not good enough to just study them. You have to apply what we learn. It's a very material, physical, active practice. We can begin to be conscious about practicing peace. And so when I wrote that, I thought, what does it mean to take a stand for peace? What does it mean to be a stand for peace? You know, we as an organization, Centers for Spiritual Living, are taking a bold stand, and we're dedicating a year to the theme of believing in a world that works for everyone. That we, as we do our part, can be a part of that consciousness. So think about it for a moment. I want you to have a little gem to take home today. What would it mean in your life, not in the way anybody else would interpret it? How could you wake up tomorrow morning and find one new way to be a stand for peace?